Welcome to the Dream Freedom Beauty Podcast. I am your hostess, Natalie Ross, and this week's guest is Hannah Corbett, who is about all things goddess and priestess. Hannah has just written and published a book called The Lunar Flower Priestess, Ritual Magic and Healing Wisdom for the Sacred Feminine Spirit. And so that is what we'll be talking about today. Before we get into our interview, I want to invite you all to two events that we're doing online. They're free, and they're going to be live, and I will be at both of them. So May 22nd, I'll be hanging out for a live Q&A with Nikki Silvestri from episode 102, and we're going to talk about all things shadow. So if you have questions about shadow work, come join us. That's May 22nd, and it's totally free. You can sign up to come join us by getting on my mailing list at dreamfreedombeauty.com/secret, and I'll be sending out the link for how you can come ask Nikki about all things shadow. What is shadow? What do you do with it? Why do you want to do anything with it? What are your shadow work questions? Bring them. And then for you business bosses out there who want to level up your business game, Stephanie Padovani from episode 106 is doing a free live webinar about how to attract your soulmate clients and what do you do to help sell your services in a way that's not icky. How do you sell your services and products with integrity to your dream soulmate clients? So that is a free webinar. That is on May 30th. And you can go to the show notes for episode 106 to click the link there and sign up for that. That's on dreamfreedombeauty.com, and just look up episode 106. It should just be a few pieces down when you go there. You'll see it. I'll also be sending out information via my email list. In case you're on the list, you can just click from the email that I send to sign up. So thank you all so much. If you're not already on the email list, come check us out. We're sharing all kinds of cool stories and tips about how to help you thrive as an empath, intuitive, or healer in this modern world. So dreamfreedombeauty.com/secret for all that, and I'll see you there. Welcome to the show, Hannah. I'm so excited to talk to you in this space because I love you. For all the listeners to know, Hannah here is one of my dear friends. So welcome, Hannah.
Thank you, Natalie. I'm so happy to be here, and I'm a huge fan. So this is a real honor.
I'm a huge fan of you, Hannah.
Oh, I love you.
So before we dive into our conversation, would you lead us and our listeners on an invocation?
Absolutely. Let's begin our invocation with some slow, deep breathing. Just use your breath to connect into your body, your space, whatever you're feeling. As you breathe deeply, take the time to call in your angels, guardians, and guides. We welcome you, angels, guardians, and guides. Please be with us. We honor the creatrix and the creator. We invoke ancestral wisdom and divine healing energy. We joyfully welcome the nature spirits and call in the spirits of the four directions and the spirits of the four elements. We praise the awakening goddess of spring and rejoice at the season of rebirth. Now just take a moment to feel into the goddess awakening within you and breathe in the spring energy as it rises like sap in a tree. Use your breath to send your roots down into the earth as you also flow up into the sky like a tree. Gently root down and flow up and breathe. Let your breath expand against the sacred body of water within you. Receive the breath as it feeds the inner flame. And just keep going with that visualization. At your own pace, do four more cycles of slow, deep breath while continuing rooting down into the earth, flowing up into the sky, holding the sacred water and feeding the eternal flame.
I did 4 cycles, Hannah.
I did too.
Is there more, or is that?
That's it.
Okay, thank you. Beautiful.
You're welcome.
My vision of the goddess within was of a mountaintop with snow and winter trees and a pink sunset, and the snow was melting.
Oh, that's nice.
It's like, I want to be there. And I was like, I am there because it's
you are
in
there.
Me.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So that would be fun to share how we met, because it was totally through the little people or the Contumble, through, you know, which Liv Wheeler, who's been a guest on this show many, many times, who she does the voice divinations for. So do you want to share from your perspective how we met? And I'll pop in wherever I feel like there's something to add.
Okay. Yeah. So we were at this women's gathering called Spirit Weavers. And I believe it was the very first workshop of the entire gathering. And we were both in a group of women. I want to say it was about 25 women gathered under a grandmother redwood tree. And Liv was inside the tree behind a curtain because it was a very large tree that had like an interior space. And she was doing her thing, and it got very intense. It became like a wailing of women. We were all just weeping and crying for the pain and suffering of the earth. And it was an amazing experience. And afterwards, I was sitting by the side of the river, and Natalie was there, and we just sat and had lunch, and it was just very like light, you know, after that kind of ritual, you have this light energy. Mm-hmm. And we just had a nice lunch, and then we didn't see each other again until the last night of the gathering. Which is kind of a party, not like a party, but there's dancing
party,
and music.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we were just both sitting by the fire, like not feeling that dance party that much, but just really connecting about how both of our experience had been. And then, I don't know, we just got really silly and started our own dance party with another couple of redwoods. And we were like twerking and booty bumping on these trees, and like then these other people started coming over and joining our dance party. And then that night we decided that we would become pen pals, and then we became pen pals, and then our friendship just blossomed from there.
Yes. And so the Contumble voice divination with the tree and the grandmother redwood and Liv Wheeler and that group of women was so powerful. I felt like, you know, as someone who, you know, me and you both carry this knowing and connection with the little people, the elementals and fairies and devas and all those nature spirits. They definitely are our allies and guides, and coming together in that group of women with someone who was like channeling the tree from this ancient African tradition was so powerful, so affirming, and so opening. Just to like know that there's something to this beyond the very personal and solitary kind of experience I had had. And so when we were walking, when it was over, we were by that stream, and I think I said something like, I really needed to get grounded. And so I had us all take our shoes off and stick our feet in the water. And we gave ourselves like little foot massages with the sand. And like, it really was
cold.
It was cold, but it really was grounding.
Yeah.
And just felt so good. Yeah. And I want to say to people, we were pen pals for a year. We didn't even talk on the phone or anything. We just only wrote letters for a year until we decided that in the next Spirit Weavers, we would caravan and take a road trip and do a little after party trip together. And now we talk on the phone all the time. It's been almost another year. So,
yeah, but what an amazing friendship for just 2 years. So deep. And I think also because you didn't know anybody at Spirit Weavers either, right? And
Nobody.
Neither did I. So I think that.
Well, I take that back. I had interviewed Amber Magnolia Hill and grandmother Karina, but I think that was it.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So I feel like in me that created a certain openness mm-hmm. of like just available to connect and then that environment, you just connect on a very mm-hmm. deep level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's magical.
It is. We recommend it.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, after that ceremony, like, I think this can happen with a lot of adventures. This is like why we go on adventures and to do these kinds of things. But I had, you know, you read the little book about Spirit Weavers and which workshops there's going to be. And you're like, oh, I'd love to go to that. You kind of make your little mental plan. And then you get there and it's just like, oh, this is what I'm doing. And then, you know, your whole plan is kind of erased and you go do like the thing that really called you there. And I think that for me was the Contemplé voice divination experience. And then I remember after that, just kind of like unraveling and crying in my tent, like just like grieving and clearing so much stuff out and unraveling that I didn't even go to any other workshops the entire time.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And it was still worth it. It was the whole experience was still so worth it. I facilitated with Grandma Karina for one and that was it. And I was like, it was just this like completely this shift, this just, you know, being held in a space that feels protected and safe and just basking in it was all that I needed in that experience. How about you? I think you did a few workshops though. You did like some weaving.
I did a lot, but I the first 2 days I just cried the whole time.
Yeah.
I did one of the cacao heart opening ceremonies, and that was just 3 hours of. But that I was crying for myself. When we were under the redwood, I was just feeling my grief for the earth, and I know everyone else there was the same thing. And then later I went deeper with my own grieving for my own losses, and then by the end, that's why we were so like giddy and light, and that's why we could be so ridiculous.
Yeah. <You know>? Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm glad we met.
Me too. It's a real gift.
So something that's happened, it's so funny because there's so many amazing women kind of coming out of the woodwork left and right of like, wow, we're waking up, we're remembering who we truly are and what kind of power our dreams and visions and blood and all these different things have. And, you know, so something that's come out of you recently is you've actually written an entire book. How many pages? Almost 200 pages, a beautiful book about awakening and being in dedication and service to the goddess within. Do you want to share with us like where the inspiration for this came? Because I know it started way, you know, years ago and it kind of incubated. Take us there.
Yeah. Okay. So I've never really identified as a writer. I was always like an artist. I identified as a painter. So I was working with the spiritual healer, who's a really amazing woman, Nicole Hogel. And every time I would work with her, she would tell me that my guides wanted me to write. And I would just kind of dismiss it and say, yeah, I'm not a writer, I'm a painter. And then, but I do actually write a lot. I write every day in my journal and I've written poems. I've even had some things published, but it was never something I wanted to do. It just kind of happened. And then one of the many journals that I keep is kind of a grimoire or a book of shadows. And I was keeping track of a lot of stuff in there. And then just one day about 4 years ago, I just realized, wait, this is an actual book. This stuff that I'm keeping track of for myself is useful. Like someone else might be interested in this. And I just feel like there's this huge power of sharing the books of shadows or sharing the grimoires to, you know, see what other witches are doing, reading their notes about how they're healing themselves, taking each other's rituals and like adapting them to our own situations. And especially because this has been so systematically squashed in us, in our culture, I just think that there's a lot of power in starting to have these conversations and share our individual bodies of knowledge. And that is what the book grew out of. And it is that. It is a grimoire, a book of shadows, and then there's a lot of storytelling and compendiums and rituals and recipes and stuff like that in there. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it took 4 years from like just the idea to now I'm actually holding it. So
yay.
Yeah. It's longer than most paintings, but to make, but it seemed like a long time, but maybe it wasn't. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess that you could also include the years before you realized that you had all this material in one of your journals here. It was like,
yeah, many years,
a lifetime in the making.
Absolutely. And I mean, I also think that there's a lot of the stuff that I want to write about as being a woman is like, I'm qualified to talk about this because I've made these mistakes or I've adopted wrong headed, world views of what it is to be a woman. And then just like all the course correction, yesterday was my 40th birthday, so I do feel like I've had many years to like work with this apparatus, just being a woman and learning how to do that.
Okay, can you give us an example, like a story of one of those shifts from the kind of old paradigm to the new paradigm of what you're speaking of?
I would say that the way I menstruate is probably one of the more dramatic stories. My mother is like a total witch, hippie, awesome. Green goddess, you know, and my dad's pretty out there as well. And when I got my period, she like totally wanted to have a menstrual ritual for me and like have a ceremony, make a big deal. And I was just, you know, more seduced by like the clean, sterilized version of sort of the commercial version of menstruation. Like it's very womb denying is what I would call it. It's like you want to almost like not be a woman. You want to like be more like a man.
Like the better you can hide it, the better you're doing.
Yeah, you want to hide it. You want to wear like white clothes and you want to like do all the stuff you normally do. You don't want to have any downtime. You want to take pills to like not feel it. You just want to basically suppress the whole experience.
Power through it.
Yeah, I powered through it for like a long time, like maybe 20 years. And then I had an ovarian cyst that I had surgery for. And after that, my cramps got so bad. And I would take like 16 extra strength painkillers in the first 2 days of my period just to like not wake up in excruciating pain. And that sort of worked, not really, for a while. And then I just started vomiting up the pills. So I couldn't even keep that down.
So your body just like rejected them.
Yeah. So after that is when I made a huge change, like all at once. I changed everything all at once around that. And I stopped wearing tampons. I stopped taking pain pills. I drank a pound of dandelion root tea in 3 months.
Do you mean like you made up like a pound worth of dried dandelion root?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I was drinking like a full pot four cups a day for 4 months straight. And I would take like one day off a week. Mm-hmm. And then I also just had a really clean living that year. And after that, I mean, ever since I went through that process, I've not had one single menstrual cramp. Now I wear washable organic cotton pads, and I offer my blood into the earth, and I'm just having a totally different experience. And I'm menstruating right now, and I love it.
So
exactly. We're like in the red tent together. And so that's probably one of the most dramatic examples of, you know, the mistakes that I made and how I sort of healed myself and course corrected and got to a more connected place.
Okay, I want to dive deeper into this because there's the like physical differences of things you can do where you change how you collect your blood and what you do with it, and maybe you add some, you know, you drink dandelion infusions and dandelion root infusions and stuff like that. But what were some of the spiritual and emotional and mental shifts in relationship with your cycle and your period blood that you made during this time?
Oh, well, I mean, I wore tampons all those many years. I never saw my menstrual blood, you know, like it was always like hidden away up there, sucked up by cotton. And then you pull it out and you throw it in the trash. Like sometimes you see it in the toilet, but, and you don't feel it flowing out of you. You don't feel that. So I'm much more aware and in it, intentional with my flow now. Like I'm like what I'm doing right now, I'm talking to you, but I'm flowing, you know, I'm flowing like into this connected divine garden, you know, I'm flowing right into it.
Wait, are you sitting outside right now while we do the interview?
No, but okay. I'm like in that nature space like that you were in before that you said I want to go there. But oh wait, I'm already there. Mm-hmm. So there's sort of that, and then I think there is even just in that, like this blood is sacred. This should not be flushed down a toilet. Like, I mean, some of it does when you just go pee or whatever, but it is so sacred and it is so powerful to just let it go into the earth, and it just connects you to everything, absolutely everything. And I have had that experience of letting my blood flow directly out of myself and into the garden. And I just get like this huge surge of energy, like up through my feet, up through my legs. And I just feel like it's the goddess saying like, thank you. Thank you for this offering. Thank you for honoring yourself for the divine vessel that you are, you know? So, that's just been a huge gift to go from seeing this as like some inconvenient, messy thing that you don't even like do with any kind of intention to now doing it very, very ceremonially. That was kind of a two-part question. What was the other part of it?
Well, I'm going to kind of lead you a little bit because I want to hear about the first time you just bled directly on the earth.
Okay. It was an accident. I was walking with my friend and our dogs in nature, and I had my period and I was wearing a pad and I had to pee, and I just found a spot and I went over there and I peed and like a lot of blood came out and it like disappeared instantly.
Into the ground.
It was just gone. And yeah, it was totally gone. And I was like, oh my God, like she just like sucked that up. Like she wanted that bad. Like she needs this. She's not getting enough of this, you know? So it was pretty electrifying. I just like jumped up and I just got like the zoomies almost. Like I was like, whoa. So after that, I started to think about it and research it and realize like people have been doing this forever, like all people, all cultures, like had some kind of a ritual for doing this.
Were you in the city or in the countryside when that happened?
It was in nature, but it was on like the edge of New York City.
I love
Yeah, I could like
that.
see the city like way out on the horizon from where I was.
So it was like
But
not, you weren't like out in like Montana or upstate New York or anything. You were like right there, kind of near the epicenter of, our East Coast, like New York City.
And it was a trip because no one was around, and it's like it's very rare to like be anywhere near New York City and not be, with other people.
Wild. So, like, after that, I just because I know you, I'm guessing that that's when you were still living in the city. You don't currently live in the city now, but did as you were living in the city, did you find spaces and ways to go bleed on the earth, even though you were in the middle of one of the most populated places on the East Coast?
I did, and I found ways because I did have a garden. I was very fortunate in Brooklyn to have my own garden. I could do a little bit of that discreetly at certain times of day, and then I could also collect it and put it into my potted plants, and that was also very discreet. And they like that a lot. And then there is one more layer of it, which is, when you grow your own herbs for yourself, you can share your blood with them, and then they're sharing themselves with you, and then there's this like infinity loop of nurturing and reciprocity that's also just another rich layer of this.
Okay, so in your research of this, because like I've had my own experience of bleeding on the earth, and just yesterday I was sitting out in my backyard and with my newly made drum and just meditating and basking for like an hour and a half. It's so my little black cat came and sat with me, and I was just like, if anyone saw me right now, they'd be like, that's a witch right there.
I think they already know.
I mean, yeah, they already know. And but it was just like, wow, this is just feels so good. And it's something that like I can't put into words. It's something that just feels good. And like you said, it was electrifying for you. Did you uncover when you were kind of looking into this and how other cultures have done this and how this is kind of something that our ancestors may have done, depending on what our lineages are. Did you find like any specific rituals or information around that, or information around what makes this so sacred, or even in your own meditations, what's come up for you about this? Because I think on the outside, it can be like, yeah, it makes sense to, return the blood to the earth. But what I want to go deeper.
Yeah, I think that it really takes you to a place, to not to a place, but to your place. Like, where do I fit in to this garden? What is my natural place in this whole big natural order? And when you're a maiden or a mother, like this is yours to do. This is your place in the garden. This is what you have to offer, and it's sacred, and it's wrong. I believe it is wrong, not to acknowledge, honor, and respect this. And like, I'm not saying you're a wrong person for not doing it. I'm just saying, like, I went from wrong to right by doing this, in a very deep way.
I guess I kind
And
of want us to say, because I personally have problems with right and wrong, but I would feel like it brings you into alignment with that way that you are already connected with the earth, because I feel like right and wrong does carry so much judgment and shaming, and like you said, it doesn't make you a wrong person, but I think I hear what you're saying. I don't know. I just, yeah. I can't.
I just mean it for myself. Like, yeah. Not that I was wrong or that it was bad, but I mean, this is, for me, it's been a lot of course correction in my life just because I did have a lot of bad ideas, you know, like, you know, womb denying ideas or disconnected from nature ideas. And so this was really a doorway for me to, mm-hmm. you know, go back into that sacred connection to the goddess, to the earth, to the plants, you know, mm-hmm. And everything there. Like, I know you and I talk a lot about the thonic realm, like that gooey, wormy, mm-hmm. decaying earth layer, you know, and this just really helps you root into that and be really okay with it, like feel really good mm-hmm. about it instead of, you know, part of our, you know, our womb denying thing is also a death denying thing.
Yeah.
So recoiling from the rotting things or the decaying things. And I feel like this sort of sutures you into the beauty of that part of the cycle as well.
Oh my gosh.
Cause the womb is like cleaning itself at this point. It's like saying, oh, we didn't do that thing that we like to do, like get pregnant,
make babies.
So now we're going to like release this and like start over. And like, this is the cleansing part of the cycle and nothing
part.
Is wasted. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nothing is wasted. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Like compost, like nothing is wasted. Everything has some place to go and a job to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And putting it in that perspective, you know, we as a society have vastly othered death and decay, and yeah. much to, I think, our detriment. Okay, all right, I'm gonna just take back what I said about right and wrong. It is wrong to deny decay.
Yes.
Because really, like, that's when, and maybe it's not right or wrong, but it's like aligned. It's like connected or unconnected, disconnected, and it's really not right or wrong. But if you want to look at for like a root source of what's got us in such a state that we're in today, I think a lot of that has to do with our denial of the decay process that connects death with new life. And that, you know, and that essentially weaves its way into so many things that have been oppressed and suppressed and othered, and one of them being the power of the womb and the power of the blood, and like, oh no, decay. And and I guess in essence, like, you know, when we menstruate, it is a death of sorts of the egg that was alive in us our whole lives, and here it goes, and here it's going to, this layer is going to shed itself and go decay and become back, you know, become the earth again, so that these nutrients can be given new life in another form. And we deny that so deeply as a society that we want to even deny the processes that happen to, you know, we don't want to support the decay process. We want to deny it. Like you said, like, we want to dress for our, when we get our periods, we want to dress in white and not have pain and keep going and power through it and be so overpowering it and conquering it and all of this. I don't know. I'm just like, getting all
so
tired.
Yeah, so masculine in a
yeah.
way, you know.
Yeah, like, yeah. Totally.
And those two things are not like separate, similar things. They're totally linked. The womb denying and the death denying.
Yes.
One is causing the other, or vice versa. They're feeding each other. Mm-hmm.
Ooh, so one could posit that when you stop denying your womb and your menstrual blood mm-hmm. and that power and that release and decay, that just by that simple act, it could unravel and unweave all those ways in which you've been denying decay in the rest of reality.
Yeah, I think it absolutely does. You just begin to just see that it's all beautiful and that it's all connected, and it, we're all on some point in some cycle.
You know? So true.
You know, whether it's your menstrual cycle or, you know, your death or life cycle or birth cycle, whatever.
Okay, so you just made me think of something. What about, so we have our menstrual cycle. What about for men, their menstrual cycle?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they've got something going on for sure.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, that deserves to be explored.
Definitely. And I want to put a bookmark in there because I do want to explore it too. I know we explore this kind of in our personal conversations, and definitely want to take it there. But before we move on, I want to ask about, you know, some shifts in how you, you know, what are some other ways that you've started treating yourself and this time, you know, besides like power through it, like what, guess what ways have you been able to honor this time and space of this point in the cycle of the release and the death and the decay as our blood returns to the earth in whatever ways it does, whether it's through a sewage system or through sitting on the earth or through the garbage?
Yeah, I think one of the most important things that people can do, and that I certainly do, is to know, you know, be connected to your cycle so you kind of know when it's coming. And, you know, that could be with a lunar calendar. That's what I use. I use the one by Snake and Snake Productions. That's my family has used that for decades. And then, you know, using that calendar with your other calendar where you schedule all your stuff, like, let those days be as unscheduled as is humanly possible. So, I mean, I know not everyone can work from home or whatever, but I do have that privilege that, you know, I have been working from home for many years. And so that's relatively easy for me to do. But I think even when I was working in an office, my body had synced to only menstruate on weekends, because my body just knew that it didn't want to do that at work. So I would always start my period like late on a Friday and be like mostly done with it by Monday.
Wow.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's a huge one. And then when you create that time to have this experience, then you just kind of start filling that time up with, you know, whatever floats your boat with your menstrual rituals. Like, maybe you like to wear a special outfit. Maybe you like to do certain things, treat yourself, cook for yourself, do yoga. I don't know. Just, I think extra self-care is the main thing. A lot of, and just being in nature, like that feels so good to me. Just getting out there in the woods and just moving into a slower pace at that time.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I hear you. And that's something that, I think, you know, sliver by sliver, piece by piece, tiny piece by tiny piece, people can incorporate that into their lives. You know, I think people might hear that and be like, but I have four kids and I run my own business and there's no way I could possibly ever schedule less on that day. And you know, I would say to those people, I hear you. You do have a lot going on. How about what's just one thing that you don't have to do during that time, and start there? What would you say to them?
Yeah, I would say I totally get it. And but also, if this is important to you, start putting it out with your manifesting intentions. Mm-hmm. Start visualizing what that looked like. Start asking yourself, how important is that to me? Because if it is important to you, then eventually you'll bring it in one way or another. I know I did. And it was just with magic, basically, you know, wanted it and I thought about it and I wanted it and I thought about it and I asked for it and I asked for it. And I'm sure I made choices that supported, that, you know, in a big picture way. And eventually that came for me.
Me too.
So I would say if someone feels like frustrated by that, put it out there. If it's really important to you, just put it out there and keep putting it out there and let it come to you.
Yeah, totally. And I think that, just visualizing, I think you just had some great points there. It's like, what would this look like if I were to do this? If it's really important to me, what would my life look like? And then the more you give yourself the space to connect with that, the better able you are to make decisions towards that coming into reality when the opportunities show up. You can recognize the opportunities as opportunities when otherwise, if you weren't prioritizing this and visualizing it, you might not even recognize when an opportunity shows up.
Exactly.
Magic, y'all. Mm-hmm. You are the magic. Make it happen. Oh, cool. Yeah. So, yeah, I love how excited you are about Bleeding on the Earth. I remember at Spirit Weavers last year, we were both on our period, and I remember you sitting there by the river on the rocks, and you had to go pee, and you were like, oops, I did it again. What? And you're like, I bled on the earth. And then in my mind, I had this like crazy idea of like, what if Britney Spears' song got, Oops, I Did It Again was remixed to I Bled on the Earth. Da-da-da-da. I don't know.
Oh my God. I think we need to make that video.
That would be hilarious. It would people would be like shocked.
Oh, they would be so shocked. It'd be great.
That would be funny. Someone make it.
it's probably up to us, but.
I know. I know. Yeah. We'll just visualize it into B.
Just add it to the list.
Add it to the list. 5 years from now, we got it. Okay.
Let's just try to do it before I hit menopause.
Right. There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So, a lot of good stuff. I just want to add a little bit. I don't know. I guess I just want to share that your enthusiasm for Bleeding on the Earth has opened me up to doing it. And ever since you shared that more of that with me, I'd heard about it and done it unintentionally here and there from camping and stuff like that. But it really was you who got me to just go sit in my yard and just chill out. And I got my skirt that I love to wear and just chill out and do nothing. And I think something about that, I'm just so rambling here, but
no, I'm loving it.
You're loving it. So
tell us more. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So when I do that, I love doing this. And if it's cold out and I want to do it, I just bundle up. Sometimes it's too cold, but then even then I can just, pour some out there. But, I feel like it opens me up to a visionary realm that, during this time, it is like every time is a visionary realm. Every time of the cycle, there's different visions and dreams that are coming. But I especially enjoy the space that this practice creates for dreams and visions to speak through me in that moment when I'm sitting bare butt on the earth, just bleeding into the earth and basking in the sun or whatever's happening outside and just relaxing and letting things flow. I feel like it really does flow new energy and thoughts and ideas into my consciousness.
Yeah, it's like it's going both ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Try it, y'all.
It is going both ways. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everyone, try it. Tell us how it goes.
And I just one more thought about
go
that.
For it.
It's like how good does it feel to let it be messy in the dirt?
Right.
Cause it's like the opposite of that. Oh, I don't see it. I don't want to see it. I don't want to feel it. I don't want to smell it. Whole thing, that womb denying thing. It's like the mess is awesome. Right.
And it's beautiful.
Yes. It's so beautiful just to see it, the color, and also Okay, I have one more thing to say about
You can have a thousand more things. Just keep.
But when you're not experiencing your blood that way, I also think that's like a health hazard. You know, it's much better to have some kind of interaction with your blood, with your eyes, your, you know, whatever you're seeing come out. Because that way you know, even scent, like you can notice changes in your cycle. You can wonder about what's going on with yourself. You can be just a little bit more tuned in and therefore more able to take really good care of yourself. And recognize any cues or changes that are, you know, concerning, you know. So that was just my last thought.
Like,
I think for now.
There's a lot more thoughts. Totally. So tell us more about this womb denying. Yeah. Unpack that a little for us. What do you mean?
Yeah, I think that's like a patriarchal thing, you know, like fear of the woman, fear of the power of the woman, and wanting to sort of lock that away, make it taboo in some way. And, you know, if the woman's body is the symbol of this life-creating thing, you know, there's always the death is right there on the other side of that too, right? Like and also that childbirth can be such a dangerous thing. I think just at some point the woman's body became like the symbol and the scary, dangerous symbol. And therefore it had to be sort of like constrained and hidden away and denied. Yeah.
When you've unpacked your womb denial, well, first let me ask, were you complicit in your own womb denial?
Certainly. Because I had, like I told you, my mom, she's not this way. She offered me another path and I just said no, because I was seduced by what the advertisers were selling, you know, and what the magazines were selling, what I was seeing projected in like a two-dimensional fantasy, someone else's fantasy, but it appealed to me. I didn't want to be, whatever was being offered to me on the other side, it didn't have that. It wasn't sexy the way the other stuff was, you know? So I really did just fall into that. And it may also have been me rebelling against my mother a little bit too. Like my whole childhood, like she was like this weird witchy woman. And I sometimes just wanted her to be normal. And I wanted to just be normal sometimes. And so that was playing into it also. And, you know, of course I've done a complete 180 on that. And like, I want to be like my mom in every way possible at this point. But yeah, I totally had a huge agency in that.
Yeah. And so like, what's really, I mean, your painful periods and the rejection of the painkillers seem to be a big turning point for you in that journey. But, there's so much to womb healing and womb wounds and the ancient lineage, you know, going back to the roots of whatever this womb denial is, wherever it started and how it's been perpetuated over time. I feel like each woman today has the potential to be carrying many womb wounds, and the denial, I think, is in effect part of not having to face them, because we don't have, as a society, we aren't taught the tools for how to heal these wounds that are carried in us and passed through us and just keep perpetuating themselves. Have you had this experience of healing your own womb wounds?
Yeah, just over and over and over and over and over again. And I'll do a lot more, just ritual. Well, I think when I had that ovarian cyst removed, it was a dermoid cyst. So
what does that mean?
It means it's basically a germ cell on your ovary, like the rest of them, like the eggs, that decides that it's going to make everything that it can possibly make. And because they're the egg of the human being, it can make everything in a human body. So this cyst was very large. It was 3 pounds, and it was like long, and it was horseshoeing.
Wait, it was 3 pounds?
Yeah, and it was horseshoeing behind my uterus and popping it out of place. And inside of this thing was like, it has like a skin on the outside, like human skin.
Wow.
Inside, it was full of hair and teeth and fat and like hormones. They even have eyeballs. I don't know if mine had any eyeballs, but they're like little monsters. And when I was young, like in my late teens and early 20s, like I remember writing these poems about how I was, my womb was like a graveyard where I like kept everything.
Whoa.
All the bad stuff, all the dark stuff, all the really heavy stuff, I was keeping it there. And I didn't know that I had the cyst for many, many years before I found out about it and then had it removed. But like, I really think that that's what I was doing there. Like I was making this place to like put all this weird stuff, and then having it removed was traumatic, but also like symbolically a healing. And I think from there on, I've just done, you know, many, many, many different rituals to continue clearing that space and continue movement in that space instead of like stagnating and holding stuff there, you know. Yeah. Just keep it flowing, you know,
changing your relationship with that space.
Yes.
Wow. I had no idea that your cyst was 3 pounds all this time. I always had just kind of pictured it as like a little like, I don't know, like golf ball or marble or something.
No.
Like wow.
I know someone who had an 11 pound one of the of this particular
did they look
they
pregnant
get huge. Oh yeah.
Wow. Oh, yeah. How old were you when you had yours removed?
I think I was 28.
Okay.
Yeah, 28.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah,
this is like new to me now.
Yeah.
Had no idea. Yeah. that it was on that level. And the link between your teenager, young adult self with this relationship to your womb is saying it's this graveyard space. Wow. Where did that come from? Have you done any journeying or meditation or healing around that and like been able to see what that's rooted in? Was this like ancestral or?
I definitely know that it had to do with, you know, sexual assault and abuse. And I mean, I generally like most people, all of the work that I've had to do is like in my lower chakras. That's where I was just, you know, kind of keeping it all. And I think that there was a severing at some point, probably through those experiences, that sort of like snipped the conscious connection between my heart and mind and that space. So it's like I could put stuff in there and just leave it there.
Right.
And it's not anywhere else. You know, it's just there. And it's like, it's kind of safe in a way. It's like, it's boxed up and it's put away.
Yeah. I don't know if you do this, but I have had in my experience, I don't have one right now because I cleared it out, but I've had rooms where I just like throw everything in it and then forget about it because you don't see it. Just like ignore it.
Exactly.
Like it weighs kind of heavy in the back of your mind every once in a while, but then you're like, eh, it doesn't really affect my day-to-day life right now. I'm just going to ignore it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you can go in there someday and clean it out and reclaim that space and make it beautiful and reconnect it to the rest of the rooms in the house and recreate that flow. Like, yeah. Yeah. So I do feel that I have, to a large extent, restored the connection between what is known there and what is known everywhere.
What does that restoration look like now? Like, if you look in your womb, what does it look like in there, you know? Or if you were to write a poem to your womb.
Oh, yeah. It's like a glowing and prismatic, like pink and crimson light. It's beautiful. It's like a rose, stained glass rose window, like shining in like a 3D kind of way. Yeah, it's very beautiful.
I would hang out in there.
Yeah. I hang out in there sometimes.
Cool. So something you wrote about in your book is this self massage, and I wanted to bring it up because I just got my period in this cycle on the first day of Mercury retrograde. Everybody.
Oh my God, I can't believe we're doing that. We're doing this today. Like, that's
I know. But it's just what we're doing. And and something I did then was I just, like, I had a night. I don't remember what night it was since then. It was like 5 days ago. But I just had this beautiful experience where I was falling asleep. I think it was over the weekend. And I just started, like, massaging my womb space, like, on my belly and just giving myself a massage all around and just, like, up my stomach and down, and it just felt like this beautiful clearing out. And I love that you talk about self massage and using that as a method to restoring womb consciousness. What's it doing? Like, I mean, I know what my experience was like when I just did this, but what do you perceive it as going on when you are, like, physically massaging that space? What's happening?
Well, the first thing I would say about that is, and this strikes me constantly, is that your arms are coming right out of your heart center. So anything you're doing with your hands, you're creating connections. So I love the feeling of connecting my heart center to my womb center in that way.
I just want to add that your arms are coming out. Maybe you were going to get there, but your arms come out of your heart and then they land right on your privates. So
yes.
Okay, I just had to add that.
Yeah, thank you for that. That's perfect, and that's right where they're supposed to go. So, and I did get a Mayan abdominal massage, which I highly recommend to everybody and anybody that has a womb. And in the massage that I got, the woman, part of the session was that she taught me how to do a self massage. And my mom's a shiatsu therapist, so she had taught me when I was young to do hara massage, which is a little bit similar. That's more like almost like a medicine wheel on your, around your navel, and you just hit all these points, and then it's just like a flowing touch, clockwise with your digestion. And I just feel that both of those things are very easy to learn, and just a really strong way to connect in. And like we were talking about with, like, the severance of the consciousness, the awakened consciousness down there, that can be very helpful in restoring that awareness, that consciousness, that connection.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the outwards in, like the physical movement and moving around of your physical energy and feeling where there's tension there and massaging it out can unlock those spiritual and energetic, mental and emotional energies that do help you remember and reawaken and reconnect with that and start a healing process from releasing whatever might be held in there, reintegrating or healing or composting it.
Yeah, it's like when that connection is severed, it's like, well, how do I feel in my womb center? I don't even know. Like I take pills when I feel pain. Like, I mean, the range of feelings that happen in there are very subtle, but vast. It's not just feeling nothing or pain or pleasure. Like there's a lot of information there. So sometimes those hands can be the bridge to get access to all the things that are really felt in there. If you can really bring your consciousness in. Yeah.
And it feels good.
It feels good. Yeah.
Yeah. So something that's a really big theme in your book, and I think in a lot of what I speak to as well in, you know, in Dream Freedom Beauty, in whatever work I do, you know, that gets shared with the community, is this aspect of remembering. Because I know you feel this way and I feel this way about we're not like learning something new. It's really like we're remembering what we already know.
Yeah, it's so beautiful.
Yeah. Do you want to share beautiful. More? Yeah. Tell us more about remembering.
Yeah, I just feel like first you have the desire to remember, but maybe you don't. Maybe the lineage has been broken. Most likely, if you know, you like, if you're like us, you know, there has been some breaks, and there are certain things that have been lost or that we feel like have been lost. And my experience has been that just wanting to remember, it's somehow all in there. Like it's in your body almost, like, or the universe is conspiring to remind you, like the story of, you know, accidentally offering my blood to the earth. It's like, you know, I didn't have an ancestor who told me how to do that, but it's like the earth told me how to do that. So I feel like first you have a desire, and then the fulfillment of it just shows up somehow in a very magical way. Either like in a dream or in an opportunity that you have a longing for, and then it just appears and it offers itself to you. You say yes to something that is a true desire of your higher self, and you're immediately rewarded with some kind of wealth of knowledge or experience that is the same way that our lost lineages were expressed. Or if they're different, it doesn't seem to matter, I don't think. You know? Yeah.
Okay, so something that you and I have talked about in our private conversations in life a little bit is just some meanderings and postulating and questions about, like, what do we do with our men, folk, or our not femme oriented folk who are, you know, like, this seems to be this whole spirituality, you know, earth connection thing. Of course there's non-femme people involved and into it, but it seems to be a really like 99%, I would say 97% of my listeners are women or femme oriented. And like, you know, I'm married to a man, you're married to a man, our friends, a lot of our friends are women who are married to men. or married to people who are very logical and linear, and not this sort of like more spiraling, free-flowing feminine vibe. And a lot of times we can see from our own experience, like, oh, wow, you know, there's teachings in my traditions that would really help them, but they just don't embrace it the same way. And we wonder, like, well, what do we do with our men or our I want to expand it to just say our partners, because not everyone listening has a man as a partner, and maybe their partner, right, you know, is just sort of like not in this the way we are.
Right. Well, I mean, I you know, I'm a witch. I identify that way. I'm a total nature worshiper, and I'm married to a Catholic, and I would not even give Reiki to my husband because the Pope is like, you know, no.
and he's very Catholic.
He's very Catholic. And I actually love that about him. Because, you know, he's not like a bad Catholic or he's actively engaged, and he's not jaded about the church. He loves the church. He loves his faith. It helps him feel connected. So you know, people might think it's weird that we're an odd couple, but I'm just glad he has a faith. Like, I think that's better than being an atheist. And, you know, I have no judgment on that in particular.
But for your personal relationship, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I want people to, men and women, just connect and to have faith and to know God and know the goddess. And I mean, I've had such powerful experiences of the divine masculine, of like God, that don't necessarily sync up with the God that a lot of people fear, you know. And I guess I would just love to see the God that I have seen be represented or experienced by everyone. And I feel like if the men could really get in touch with that aspect, I feel like so much would be healed. You know, you know, not this God that wants to like punish or control or judge or all of that, but more this God that just wants to love and create life and shed light. That's my experience of the divine masculine, is that it's just pure, unconditional love. And, it just is an experience of pure light and the desire to infuse that spark into the 3D, you know, into the goddess. So, I would just love to see that more embodied in the men and in the culture, and for women to create space for that, because I feel like the healing is happening for the women. The women are sort of healing each other and themselves. And I think the more and more and more that happens, we're just going to start creating spaces, for the men to be doing their own healing. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's wishful thinking, but I do kind of see that. Mm-hmm. What do you see?
Well, I think something you said there's so key, which is the making spaces. And, you know, I think a lot of this, like, women are so, we have this reminder every month through our cycle that we are living in cycles, and this is such a portal and a gateway into the place that, as you said earlier, of like, what is our place here on this beautiful earth in nature and in connection with the spirit of life that runs through everything and in the cycles that really govern our lives. You know, we don't control the cycles. we just do our best to live by the cycles and remember the cycles. They're right here in front of our eyes. How do we remember to see them? And when we do that, we do create the space for our own healing. And I think that that's so key. Because that affects every single relationship we have. You know, once we start to create that space for ourselves and create firm, but also still permeable and flexible boundaries around that, where we affirm our own space and cycles and whatever it is we are remembering to others, that can click something in their own mind and heart about, well, how am I doing it? You know, they can, it might affect something, you know, if I tell my husband, no, I won't do that because I am on my cycle and I don't have the bandwidth or energy to do that. And I'm actually going to sit here and be with myself and let myself give back to the earth in this way. And, you know, maybe he can notice like, huh, she's giving herself permission to say no to having to do something. And what can I give myself permission to say no to having to do something when I really don't feel it? And I think that's, you know, it's so subtle and it's so covert almost. But I think it can be super powerful. I think that it really is that lead by example. And I think that we also have to examine what are our own judgments. Like, where are we blaming men in general for our problems, when really it's up to us to reclaim and remember and teach and guide and lead each other, rather than, you know, demanding that the men change themselves. Really, I think it's up to us to remember and lead that shift in loving, firm, sometimes fierce ways.
Yeah. Thank you. I totally agree. And for me, I can only create this space for someone else if I've already done it for myself.
Right.
You know, if I go back many years to when I was angry and still reacting and not healed, and like with the Me Too right now, I think this is a huge catharsis because people, it's like I see how I was at one time reflected in the whole culture.
Right.
And it's like everyone's angry and like they've had enough and they're like, you know, airing it all out. And I do think that's part of the healing process. And when you get further in that healing, you're not angry anymore.
Yeah.
And you just want to heal anything that is toxic in that masculinity, because it doesn't need to be there. Men can be much more powerful if they get in touch with something much softer, much more loving, much more gentle. There's so much more for them to receive if they go to that place. And I think that is a place that we can create.
Mm-hmm. It's so funny. Yeah. I'm just envisioning my husband right now because he's, you know, like he's such a fiery person and just like, I don't know, he's just so like vivacious and energetic. And I'm always teaching him like gentle. Like, sometimes I feel like he's like a 3-year-old, and I'm like,
yeah,
gentle.
Cause that's what I just pictured.
Right. Because like he just wants to like kiss me. And I'm like, gentle.
Yes.
And it's like sometimes the gateway in is through gentle and like teaching, you know, we really are always teaching each other. It's really, I mean, I don't have any answers either, just, you know, what I shared earlier. And I think this is a conversation we need to continue to have as a collective and be brave about and really, I don't know, shed light on.
Yeah. And I wonder what the men would have to say. Like,
yeah.
I mean, this whole dynamic of this whole paradigm of like the patriarchy and all the things men have to do and focus on in order to be like, quote unquote, successful and all of that. I just lost my train of thought, but
well, I think I know where you're going, but
yeah, you pick it up for me.
Okay, tell me if this was it. Is it's hurting them too?
Yes, it so is. And there's something so much more rich and delicious in a different path.
Right. Right. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So one of my guests on the self-care club, Shona Holm, she said something. She said, you have to throw a better party. And this is a phrase I think of again and again, because I'm like, wow, when you throw a better party, people see, they notice it, and they want to come party with you, and they want to know what's up. Like, wow, what are they doing? And
yeah,
I feel like if you throw a better party and your partners, whether they're men or women or whatever the way they roll, you know, if your partners see like, wow, they've really, you know, they're like, wow, you're really throwing a good party over there. What are you doing? You know, that it kind of opens them up, you know, instead of this like nagging or like shaming or blaming. It's like, actually, why don't you know, oh, maybe you can come join me.
Yeah.
Like, come join me in this party.
Maybe they just need an invitation. Maybe they just need permission. You know, like, it's amazing to me how often people don't allow themselves to have an experience that they deeply want or need. Ugh. Just because nobody told them it was okay to do that. A lot of people just need that permission or that invitation. Just like, walk through the door, just come on in, you know.
We're going to give people permission right now.
Yes. Yes. Men, be your glorious divine masculine selves, and women, you have that in you as well. Like, there's no being that doesn't have both God and goddess like flowing at the same time within.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like this is, I'm really wanting to go deeper with this topic, but it's still being formed. So I guess we'll have to pick that up at another time.
Yeah. Maybe we'll have to create a man space.
A man space. I know, but the thing is like, would the men have to create that for themselves? Because, you know, I know my husband deeply create, like, he loves hanging out with my friends, and my friends love hanging out with him. And I know he would really, really love to have a space where he could hang out with other men and have that same quality of lightness and joy and ease as he has when he hangs out with me and my girlfriends. And, you know, just like, what does that look like for men? And it's different. You know, I don't think it would, maybe it would be them sitting in a circle and like having a ceremony, but maybe not. Maybe it's something totally different. And I don't know, like, men, dream it up and let us help you make it. Cause we help, we have the power to help you too. So to the four men listening.
We're planting the seeds with you, four men. It's on you.
Oh my gosh. There's probably like 100 men. Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe, because there's about 4,000 or 5,000 people who listen. So if 1% of them, I don't know, maybe 40 people.
Yeah.
We'll say just to be safe, there's 20 men listening.
That is plenty to begin a gathering.
Okay. True. Like, what kind of party can you throw with 20 dudes?
Okay. Let's ask the men listening to email you, Natalie, and say that they...
They want to throw a better party.
Want to create a group. Yeah, they want to create a better party group. And then you could just facilitate them to all be on a group email and then see if they could turn it into a gathering or something.
Okay, I'm going to do this right now. I'm going to make a note. I'm going to say dreamfreedombeauty.com / throw a better party.
man space.
But you know, it's like the, okay, so here's the thing, people, like, I guess it is a lot of men, because like, we have femme and femme oriented, but what would it be for like men? Because maybe there's I don't know, I mean, like, what's the term for masculine identifying people? Because femme just flows so easily from feminine, but like mask, I don't know, that just sounds weird. I don't know, maybe someone educate me, please, because I've looked this up actually and I did not find an answer. But you know, because is this
macho man,
macho, but macho like has so much machismo, you know, like that, like,
yeah, but I like that
machismo.
I mean, isn't that kind of what we're celebrating here? In a way, but
I don't know. I think
way,
it's been maybe so tainted by the culture of like aggression and
Right.
I mean, it would have to be reclaimed, kind of like we've reclaimed Witch, like,
Yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, this,
Yeah.
you know, what is this?
Yeah.
Maybe we could just say the
Divine
divine
man.
masculine,
Yeah, the
divine,
divine masculine man.
yeah. Man, I don't know.
The divine macho man.
The divine macho.
Yeah, there we go.
The divine
That's
macho.
it. That's it.
Oh my
You got
God.
it.
Oh my God. Okay. So I really am gonna make this. Okay, I really am gonna we're gonna like and someone if I'm totally like just really offending people, tell me, you know, I'm not necessarily gonna change what I'm doing, but I will get educated. Is that just, am I just sounding like a total asshole right now?
No, we're just trying to
You
help.
know what? I'm ignorant and I'm just trying to help, so educate me and I'm going to do the best I can. That's my promise. All right. So dreamfreedombeauty.com/divine macho for real. I'm going to put that up there and people can submit their questions. If you are a femme-oriented person and you have partners or friends or allies who have this yearning to like create this space and way for masculine oriented folks, then go to dreamfreedombeauty.com/divine macho and fill out the form. Share with us your questions, your ideas, your thoughts, whether you have answers or not, even if you just have a question or you're just like in, fill it out and we'll collect the data here and see if we can make something happen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Awesome. Love
This is so funny. This is so
it.
divine. I want to say divine nacho and like nachos are divine, but
Well, there's a reason they rhyme.
oh wow. So okay, cool. Divine macho, y'all. I'll put that link in the show notes too. This is so funny. Okay, I'm
I
making.
mean, we always have a lot of ideas when we talk. I
I
mean,
know. I
it just
come.
happens.
Like, sometimes when I have conversations with you, I just take notes and I'll have like 2.5 or 3 or more pages of notes. I'm like, dang.
Yeah, and like 5 decades worth of work
I know,
to
right? But I think a lot of what we do too is we just kind of like channel ideas into this realm and they can be more accessible by those who are actually ready to put them into form. Even if we're
Yeah.
just talking about them, it kind of adds fuel to that fire. It kind of like helps solidify them a little bit. Which is why it's important for everyone listening to have these kinds of conversations with people. You know, like you really do like power up the kind of divine threads and the frameworks and like bring those ideas alive even if you're not the one or even can if even if you're not physically connected to anyone who's doing it, you're you know, it's kind of like when Darwin came up with his theory and someone else whose name I don't even know, I mean this is kind of it's kind of funny, but they both had the same theory, but Darwin published his first and he got to claim it, but it's not about claiming anymore, but it's like, you know, these ideas are floating around in our collective consciousness, and when you dream them up and talk about them, you give them energy and you give them life, and they do come to life. And this is the power that we have as conscious beings, where when you're giving all your energy and conscious time to like bitching and moaning about the government, then you're just making more of the government. But like when you give some of your conscious time and energy and awareness to dreaming up weird shit like we just dreamed up, you're giving your energy to that and helping it come into form. So like, what are you paying attention to, y'all? I just got on my soapbox. This is like one of my biggest
Thank you.
soapboxes, but
I love it. I love
but it was a
it.
teaching moment, so yeah.
Yes.
So there we go.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
There's a quote from this book by Mark Booth that's called The Secret History of the World, and he talks about the difference between people thinking and thoughts peopling. And it's just this idea of not being proprietary about your work or your output or your ideas because they're not really yours. You're just a channel, you're just a receiver. And I really love the way that takes the ego out of like the creative process and is
Yes.
just like, oh, just let me just open and let it just flow. I love it.
Yeah. The language I would use around that is I love that. So this is where we're connecting the masculine and feminine here. Because I would say that there is a dream that's dreaming you, and are you going to bring it to life?
Yeah.
That's the dream in Dream Freedom Beauty, all hint.
Yes.
It's that thought. It's like these thought forms, these dreams, these like, and you know, you and I have talked about this, how it's like in the 5D or other, you know, more subtle realms, and the ideas and energy are coalescing and coming into form in the 3D, and the ecstasy of that, and like the dreams are dreaming us into being as we dream them into being. And that's this like, it's like this spirit connection highway, which leads me into talking about spirit guides.
Oh my God, that was perfect. wait, I have something. I have something.
Bring it.
So like when Nicole Hogel told me that my guides wanted me to write a book, they didn't just want me to write a book. Yeah. They wanted to write the book with me.
Okay.
And because I said yes to that, I had so many, and it was not constant. It came in like fits and bursts. But they were very distinct, that things that were meant to be included in the book came to me for the book. If I had not said yes to the book, they wouldn't have come to me.
Huh.
You know, like I had this goddess that was visiting me every night for like a month while I was writing about her, this tree goddess. And, you know, she was just using me because I said yes to her, you know, and she had, you know, over time with Nicole had taken every opportunity to encourage me, you know, like open up to this, say yes to this, be a part of this. And yeah, so I just, that you just triggered that completion.
Oh, I triggered you.
Yeah, you did. In a good way.
I love that. I know. Reclaiming trigger, y'all.
Yeah.
Yes, I love that, because it really, this invitation was like poking you, and each of us, I feel like each of us has this sort of each of us has this beautiful divine mixture of pieces and bits and sparks of consciousness that were this like perfect recipe to be the vessel, to we're this perfect, I don't know, container, the hollow bone, the container to bring certain things into form. And like these guides for you, they saw something in you that said, she gets this, and I want to work with her to bring this into form. And if you had said no, those ideas may have just lingered in the 5D forever, or maybe someone else would have picked them up and said yes to those guides and brought them through. And it's not a race to like who did it first, but it's more like, what are we picking up from those other realms, and who's asking us, who's asking to come through you, who's asking, who's helping you bring these pieces of what I believe is our higher selves, where we are literally all one, you know, and we've individuated here, but who's helping you bring these into this form here where we can see it in its 3D individual droplet of consciousness form, and like marvel at that, and then feel how that resonates with within each of us and within the collective. I'm getting very heady now, but like, I don't know. Tell us more about guides, because like these guides really do connect us. I love how this saying yes to this experience brought you these new guides who channeled this through, and it would have come through differently through someone else, but or might not have ever come through at all, but you said yes.
I said yes. And at the time, Nicole Hogel also told me, she said the very first time I worked with her, she was like overwhelmed, because she said there were at least three different groups of wisdom holders that wanted me to channel different bodies of work.
Yeah.
And one of them's a tarot deck that I have been channeling for all these years, but I have not let myself work on it yet because I had to finish this book first. But that's like a totally different set of guides than the guides that were channeling the book. And I've had at times a sadness like, oh, now that I finished this book, does that mean these guys aren't going to like talk to me anymore? Like, you know, it's like our work is done. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they have more work for me to do, but,
or maybe they'll help you with the, like, you know, getting the book out there.
Yes, I think they definitely will, because why would they go to all that trouble of like dealing with me, you know?
Yeah.
If they weren't going to like give me a little help to get it where it's supposed to go. But like this will help it reach some of its intended readers, most likely. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's such a joy and a gift to work with the guides from other dimensions. It's honestly one of the greatest joys of my life.
Hmm. How do you and work I with know, them?
Oh, so many different ways. Dreaming, and then, you know, what you might call like astral journeying or shamanic journeying. Going into the other realms and opening to just see whatever is there. Sometimes I make appointments because, like, I feel like I'm, you know, I can let them know that I'll be ready and, like, prepared and in optimal shape to receive.
Wait, we gotta press pause here because, like, yeah. You make appointments, like, you'll just tell them through your mind or heart or whatever, like, on Thursday night at 7 p.m., we're gonna hang out, I'm gonna be ready to receive you.
Yeah.
Okay. Otherwise, do they try to, like, come through and you're, like, on the bus and you're like, I can't write this down right now?
No, I'll take their stuff anytime. I think for me, because I'm like, my equipment's not that great. You know, I'm not like, I mean, I'm psychic, but I'm not like the most psychic. I think there are much better channels than I am. So I do consciously prepare myself to be the most open that I can be for those kind of sessions. And then stuff does just come through all the time, like in nature or as you lay down to go to sleep and you close your eyes and you all of a sudden see like a whole bunch of stuff or, I mean, I do see stuff constantly, but it's never in my control, it seems, unless I'm like sort of making an appointment and saying like, you know, I'll be ready. And then it has happened that I've gone there and then nobody else showed up, you know, and then when that kind of stuff happens, I just think it's something astrological. Like, I don't know where all these guides are, but I do believe that they're in different places. So there could be like a planet in the way. Like, they can't transmit to me, or I can't receive because there's literally something in the way, or, you know, the stars just have to line up in a certain way, or it's better if the moon is new, or it's better if the moon is full. Like, I think all of these different guides have like slightly different or very different sets of rules that allow them to come through. And I have some guides that come through very strong in a constant way, and then others that are very, very far, you know, very, you know, quiet, hard to receive.
I couldn't help but think maybe they're just getting their guide periods and they don't want to come hang out.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
They're over on their like constellation, like emitting stardust on their.
Yes. On oh my God. I mean, oh my goddess. That is so beautiful. Oh my God. Thank you. Wow.
Guide periods. Guides get periods too.
Wow. I love that.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
I love
they
that.
They definitely do. They certainly do.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, working with guides has been a powerful thing for me, too. And, I mean, it doesn't really matter what you call it. If you call it your guides and you feel like it's a spirit outside of you, or if some people connect with like their higher self, or maybe they actually do learn how to channel a specific being. I think as long as, you know, there's certain, this is where I think it's helpful to have a teacher when you really start getting into this, because you can learn how to navigate and how to check, like, is this a being who is aligned with love and harmony, or is this a being that's essentially coming to create chaos and harm? And learning to check those things is important. So I guess for listeners, like, yeah, definitely connect with your guides, but I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I'm making it more complicated than it needs to be.
No, I don't think you are, just because, well, for two reasons. I think a lot of people have a fear of exactly what you're talking about, and yeah, that fear itself can limit them from even taking these journeys.
Right.
And then the other thing is, like, that you should be worried about that stuff. I totally believe in all the stuff that you don't want to pick up or encounter, you know, you just generally want to avoid. And, you know, we're both still students. Like, no matter how many teachers we've worked with, we still want to work with more teachers. Teachers are awesome. Like, they empower you. Reading a book empowers you. Just do everything that empowers you. And that, you know, use your intuition to know who the right people to work with are, because I really think that there should be a real positive feeling about the teacher. And I guess, yeah, like the same way that you should be concerned about the spirits, like you should also be concerned about the teachers. But, mm-hmm, you know,
do your homework.
Yeah, just do your homework, and most of the homework is in your gut. It's in your intuition. It's a feeling that there's not a question. There's just a knowing, like, yes, I want to work with this person.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And by the time this is live in May, it's March as we're recording, a few weeks back, I will have published an interview I did with Liv Wheeler, who is the Contemplé divination, voice divination woman who we spoke about at the beginning of this episode, where Hannah and I met. Full circle here, but full spiral. And we really got deep into entities there. And so I think if anyone's listening and they really want to know more about that, definitely check out that Liv Wheeler episode, because we just went way into it. Oh my gosh, more into it than I've ever publicly gotten into it. So it was really interesting. So but I think overall, I think if you're scared of entities, you probably already have one, and learning to connect with your guides is going to help you get clear. And it's not a life or death thing. Don't freak out. Like, yes, it happens. Yes, this is, you know, but that's part of why we're all waking up and helping each other to learn and remember these tools and practices. And I think if you just ask from your heart to be protected and guided in love and the divine, and to connect with your guides, they'll show up and they will start helping you when you learn, you know, just you have to ask them to show up, and you have to make the space to connect with them, right?
Yeah. And you don't even need to know who they are. You can just say, divine angels, guardians, and guides, please be with me. You know, that's it.
Yeah.
You're starting to create the two-way connection. Because they've always been there for you. They just may not have known that you were open to receiving. So
Or maybe they've been transmitting this whole time and you're just like saying no, and now you can say yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool. Mm-hmm. Well, Hannah, it's fun to talk with you always. I'm glad you finally came on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah. Natalie. It was such a pleasure.
Thank you. And your new book is The Lunar Flower Priestess. Is that the full title? I'm so sorry.
It has a little subtitle. That is the full title, but the subtitle is Ritual, Magic, and Healing Wisdom for the Sacred Feminine Spirit.
That's right.
And it's available on Amazon. So just it's Hannah Corbett, Lunar Flower Priestess.
Beautiful. And we'll link to all that. And then you offer a bunch of other stuff. Do you want to share that with us and where people can find you?
Yeah, remotely, I do tarot readings, which I've done with you before. So
loved it.
You know how that
works.
On
point. Your guides are excellent.
Yeah, so remotely, that's what I do. And I have a website, Lunar Flower Priestess, so you can find me there.
.com?
.com, yeah. And my Instagram, which I use a lot, is Lunar Flower with no vowels. So LNRFLWR.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
Lunar Flower Priestess. You know, we didn't even get into why it's Lunar Flower, but I think we did.
We did without
saying as much.
It's, you don't have to say it. You just listen to the everything we said and you just know.
And that's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go bleed on the earth and you'll know.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you, Hannah. Yeah. I love you and hugs.
I love you, Natalie. Yeah. Talk to you soon.
Yeah. Thank you all so much for listening. I hope this was an inspiring episode for you. And if you are not already on the email list, come hang out with us at dreamfreedombeauty.com/secret, and you'll get all the information about our free live online events. And I'm sharing stories and tips every week about how to thrive as an empath, intuitive, or healer in this modern world, because it's sometimes very confusing, right? So I'm sharing stuff through email there that will help give you clarity, lift up your spirits, and get you focused and aligned with your truth so you can really thrive in this world. That's dreamfreedombeauty.com/secret, and I will see you there.